Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
From Kim to Kim to Kim, North Korea's history has been the story of Kim Il-sung, father of Kim Jong-il, father of presumed leader Kim Jong-un. The announcement from state media this morning that the dear leader passed away from the effects of fatigue 2 days ago was delivered with barely concealed emotion. Here is that same state TV anchorwoman a few years ago in much happier times. She is announcing what will go down in history as Kim Jong-il's main historical legacy, the announcement that North Korea is a nuclear nation.
I'm very much proud of our scientists and the researchers who have conducted such a very, very successful nuclear underground test.
There is the scratchy soundtrack of the 2007 75th anniversary celebrations in North Korea with vast parades and synchronized stadium displays. But making North Korea a nuclear nation, even amidst famine and a ravaged state-controlled economy, is a mixed legacy at best. Even if military bands playing in somber minor keys on the death of Kim Jong-il, reports of crowds in Pyongyang openly weeping suggest the Kim cult is as powerful as ever. Since the 1990s, North Korea has had to rely almost completely on neighbor China for basic food, energy, and convertible currency for financing imports of any kind. Nuclear technology has been a reliable, if limited, export, and it is unclear if that trade will continue. Whoever succeeds Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un, or any number of other mysterious military or political leaders, they will inherit and need to maintain a tradition of almost unimaginable isolation. A year ago, writer Barbara Demick interviewed North Koreans who fled into China, who told heartbreaking stories of their lives. One woman's story says it all.
The first thing that Song Hee said to me was, I was very lucky, I was very rich in North Korea. And what she meant by rich was that she would get an egg every so often, maybe once or twice a month, that she had tasted banana. To her, that was rich.
To have tasted banana, the definition of rich. A very low bar greets the new leadership in Pyongyang. The key question for the new leaders of the now nuclear North Korea is whether they will take their nuclear power to a new escalated level and try to maintain the astonishing isolation of North Korea's people, or whether to take a completely new course. Will Kim Il-sung represent the peak of isolation and military confrontation in North Korea, or just the beginning? It's exactly what they're thinking about this morning in Seoul, South Korea, where we're joined by the BBC's Seoul correspondent, Lucy Williamson. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are people in South Korea thinking about the next stage, the next course in North Korea?
I don't think people are thinking very much. I think the focus at the moment is very much on the worry about what might happen. We saw the reaction here from the government just minutes after we got the announcement on North Korean state television. The president here in South Korea had convened an emergency meeting of the National Security Council, had put all military units on high alert. That gives you some sense of just how worried people are. I mean, as you said, North Korea is a nuclear-armed state. It's extremely isolated. It's very difficult for governments here in the region and around the world to know exactly what's going on at this key time of transition.
Although, Lucy Williamson, this is something they must have prepared for. It's been known for a while that Kim Il-sung was in poor health.
It has, and in recent years, he'd actually been seen to improve somewhat. He's undertaken a number of foreign trips to Russia, to China in the last year or so. And when he was photographed by foreign media, which is always a much more reliable indication than the North Korean state media, he looked much healthier, more active than he has done in the past. So I think that put people's fears at bay a little bit. They thought he was perhaps improving, that they didn't have to think quite so imminently about his succession. Of course, there are going to be many contingency plans here in South Korea and elsewhere for exactly this kind of eventuality. But the real question they're grappling with is what eventuality? What's going to happen now? And that's the problem with working with such a secretive state, that it may be on the surface that Kim Jong-un has been named or nominated as the successor to his father. But the real power brokers, the army in North Korea, the old guard around his father, what's really happening there? You know, is this transition throwing up new threats, new divisions, or are things progressing smoothly? Stability is the name of the game for many governments around the world.
Is there any sort of procedural precedent for this line of succession, or do we have factions within the Politburo or the Central Committee or whatever institutions exist that will fight it out?
That's the key question. There are said to be factions that have disagreed with each other, but some analysts disagree over whether those differences are real or, you know, talked up for the sake of the external media, or we just know so little about what really goes on at the heart of power. But absolutely, this transition, one of the problems with it also is that it doesn't happen very often. North Korea has only had two leaders in its history, so this transition has only happened once before. And it's a very odd kind of transition because North Korea is a communist country. This is a sort of regal, hereditary kind of succession. It went from the founder of North Korea to his son, and now it appears to be passing to his son. And that's not an easy thing to pull off in a communist country. So there needs to be a lot of myth-making, a lot of ground preparing to prepare the country to accept the new leader. And that's something that North Korea apparently hasn't had much time to do, because they only announced, at least to the outside world, they only presented Kim Jong-il's son to the world last year, made him a four-star general, gave him an important position in military commission. Until then, he was largely unknown. So that's another concern, that there hasn't really been time to bed down the succession.
And we're speaking with Lucy Williamson, who's the BBC correspondent in Seoul, South Korea. And that's really the issue here, because he's someone in his 20s. We've only known him on the world stage in any capacity for a year or so. Let me ask you just about the details of the announcement this morning. You do get the image, and you described all of these public appearances that Kim Il-sung had been making over the last year that made people feel as though perhaps he was in better health than we all thought. You do get the impression, if he collapsed from fatigue at a public event on a train 2 days ago, that it must have caught the North Korean government completely by surprise.
That's right. And those 2 days, who knows what they needed them for? There was some talk in the Chinese state media that there was an autopsy carried out on Sunday, which had to confirm the cause of death before they would release it. But yes, absolutely. Preparing for the succession, making sure there wasn't going to be a big power vacuum, must have been one of the factors that needed to be thought about before they could go public with this. I have to just say that we are taking the North Korean state media, we're taking their word for what actually happened and how Kim Jong-il died. They say he died of a heart attack brought on by overwork on a train. We don't have any independent confirmation of that. We just don't know what has gone on behind the scenes.
Indeed. Finally, the state of emergency declared by the South Korean government in reaction to this, is that because there is at least a record of North Korea in times of instability, using that as a pretext for escalating military confrontation along the border?
There are many things that South Korea is concerned about. The two Koreas have never signed a peace treaty since they fought a war in the 1950s. There have been repeated provocations across the line of control. So it's a constant worry here, and particularly at a time like this when there are a number of risk factors that could result in military action or provocations, one of which might simply be that the army or Kim Jong-un decides it would be a good way to cement this transition. As I say, there are a number of scenarios that South Korea and other countries are preparing for. The difficulty is they just don't have much information about which one is going to happen.
Kim Jong-il is dead, presumed the leadership passing to Kim Jong-un, his son. No official announcement as yet, and South Koreans reacting. Lucy Williamson, BBC Seoul, South Korea correspondent, thanks so much.
Thank you.